My name is Malcolm and I'm an alcoholic. I come fully equipped. In case you don't know, I'm living with cancer and I'm advanced stage and inoperable, and the only way they can feed me is through my veins. So this is my breakfast, lunch and dinner. And I won't be finished until 12 o'clock. And I will be speaking with my mouth full. So get over it. I am truly grateful to be in this fellowship. Did you feel the pressure? In case you don't know, I'm living with cancer and I'm advanced stage and inoperable. And the only way they can feed me is through my veins. So this is my breakfast, lunch and dinner. And I won't be finished until 12 o'clock. And I'm an alcoholic. I come fully equipped. Symbols of achievement I might have achieved all throughout my life. It's simply a story about a man who got lost and who was blessed. Well, if you didn't, it was there. I was overwhelmed by the love I felt when I walked in, because I knew what it was. I have never known that experience outside in my life before I met you. I've always been looking for that all my life. You know, when I walked into the rooms, you said that I was welcome. This is a story about my life. It's not about my opinion. It's not about my intellectual ability or my status or my prestige. This was known between us. Did you feel that heart-to-heart connection between the brothers and sisters in this meeting? Well, if you didn't, it was there. I was overwhelmed by the love I felt when I walked in, because I knew what it was. I have never known that experience outside in my life before I met you. I've always been looking for that all my life. You know, when I walked into the rooms, you said that I was welcome. This is a story to be in this fellowship. Did you feel the presence of God when I walked in, and you walked in together, we met, and his presence was known between us? Did you feel that heart-to-heart connection between the brothers and sisters in this meeting? Well, if you didn't, it was there. I was overwhelmed by the love I felt when I walked in, because I knew what it was. I have never known that experience outside in my life before I met you. So get over it. I am truly grateful to be in this fellowship. Did you feel the presence of God when I walked in, and you walked in together, we met, and his presence was known between us? Did you feel that heart-to-heart connection between the brothers and sisters in this meeting? Well, if you didn't, it was there. My name is Malcolm and I'm an alcoholic. From myself and from the people around me. And because a child can only do what a child can do is process everything through the self, I somehow felt I was responsible for everybody and everything. And so I started looking for me outside of me. In many places did I search. I was afraid. I just was reacting to these things that were going off in my life. Like, for example, my father's rage. I didn't really know what to do with that, especially when it was directed at me. I didn't know what to do when I thought somehow I was to blame for his rage. And so I internalized it. And for me, what I did in that experience is I became somewhat isolated from myself. I grew into adulthood, and technology arrived, and the convenience of life appeared, and things were suddenly, and we want you to keep coming back. That's a very important piece of it. We want you to know, even though things get rough, sisters in this meeting. Well, if you didn't, it was there. I was overwhelmed by the love I felt when I walked in, because I knew what it was. And I won't be finished until 12 o'clock. Whatever he felt was so frightening out there. He eventually got disconnected so that he didn't know who to tell you who he was. So he'd tell you what you thought he would tell you what you thought you wanted to hear. Now, I did that a lot. What that developed was a series of lies that developed a false self for me. And it had such pain around it because I knew there was something wrong with that. But I did not know who to talk to about it. I did not know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. I just acted like I did. Did you ever act like when I grew into adulthood and technology arrived and the convenience of life appeared and things were suddenly made easy for me? Meeting, there were quite a few people said they were new. I want you to know you're welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we want you to keep you. I've always been looking for that all my life. You know, when I walked into the rooms, you said that lunch at dinner. And I won't be finished until 12 o'clock, probably. And here at 13, I'm totally lost. And my father, when my mother died, and I saw her move from about 240 pounds to about 160 pounds. She looked like something out of a concentration camp. And I saw her move from about 240 pounds to about 160 pounds. She looked like something out of a concentration camp. Well, if you're a loving God, why do you let this happen? I'm a child, I don't know things, but you must answer my question. And you have no answer for me. And so once again, what do? I turn my back on God. I avoid the question. I run away. Now, I did that a lot. It was, you know. And so that would make for me pretty, what I would consider difficult times, no difficult than a lot of people, things that were going off in my life. Like, for example, kind of a two-set album. You know you're welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous. From the symbols of achievement I might have achieved, or in between the brothers and sisters in this meeting. At 14, I got to a point where I was really screwed up. I got pretty good marks in school. I guess I was pretty bright, but I wasn't bright enough, you know. I didn't quite get it. I was always getting into trouble. They could cane you then. They used to cane you with these bamboo sticks. You used to have to register in the book if you got more than six, three on each hand. Well, I'll try to slow it down a little bit. Here she is, my little Lisa. I love you, Lisa. Thank you so much. At 14, I got to a point where I was really screwed up. I got pretty good marks in school. I guess I was pretty bright, but I wasn't bright enough, you know. I didn't quite get it. A great solace. A great love. I'm a child, I don't know things, but you must from. And I didn't believe in God. I had this act of avoidance trying to get away from these. And I would try to figure out what was really going on. In many places did I search. I grew up to these things that were going off in my life. Like, for example, this experience called my childhood. They had no color camera, even though things get rough out there. There's a place in this planet. So I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt when I walked in. Because I knew what it was. And you start to disappear. And my father decided to put me in the coal mines at 14 years of age. Now, I'm already thinking that life sucks. I'm already thinking that there is no God. There's nothing in this world for me unless I get it. And here he is. He sticks me in what I consider the purgatory of purgatories. You know, when you put a little hat on your head with a helmet, that's what the men would say, suck it up. Well, I did suck it up, to my detriment, and to everybody around me's detriment. And what happened is I couldn't take it anymore. I was about 16 and a half to decide I want out. Now, I was allowed to drink beer at that time, and I also was allowed to wear long pants. Long pants were a symbol, I kid you not, of manlyhood. I could only wear short pants if I was not a man. My father wouldn't let me wear long pants until I was working. And so I was working with long pants and drinking alcohol, and I was also smoking cigarettes. I'm 15, what am I supposed to do with this? suck it up. That's what the men would say, suck it up. Well, I did suck it up, to my detriment, and to everybody around me's detriment. And what happened is I couldn't take it anymore. I was about 16 and a half, and I decided I want out. Now, I was allowed to drink beer at that time, but I also was allowed to wear long pants. Simply didn't know who I was. And my father decided to put me in the coal mines at I'm not going to let you do it. And, you know, I thought all of a sudden I belonged to an old club. It was the working class club. I went down to the pub and threw darts and, you know, talk to shop talk. And next thing I knew, I'm still feeling like something wrong. I don't want to be here. I don't want to go to the coal mines anymore. So I told my dad I'm not going to the coal mines anymore. And he got very, very, very upset with me. In fact, he got violent with me. And I got to the point that I said, Dad, I'm not going to take this anymore. I don't parted ways when I was 16 and a half, 17. Some of you might relate to that in terms of child-parent relationship. So I stopped him. I didn't feel good about it. In fact, I felt really bad about it. But I stopped. And I told him, you'll never lay another finger on my brother or sister. Never. And you just simply leave us alone if you've got nothing good to say to us. We're good people. And we're trying to find a way. By a trepanner machine. And his whole shoulder was taken with it. I'm 15. What am I supposed to do with this? He can make him really feel sorry.
Wrong.
You know? He would put the cane a little bit higher and tap it. A great love for each other. They said no who to talk to about it. I did not know who to get comfort from. And I believe it was the very essence who Malcolm was. But slowly but surely, because he was in no difficult in a lot of people, but this isn't the impact it had on me. I don't know what impact it would have on you. It may not have an impact on you. That's what they did. And so that part of my life, there's a place on this planet that loves you and wants you and wants to know who got lost and who was blessed to be found in your So get over it. I'm an alcoholic. Incredibly blessed. My brothers and sisters just came and spent time with me. And you know, we'd have one of these breakfasts that start at 6:30 in the morning and they don't quit till 11. You know what I mean? Because somebody's getting ready for lunch. I know that. You fill me up. You truly fill me up. So here I am in Europe trying to figure out what's going on with my life. I'm now 17, 18, 19. Watch it. Kind of like I'm doing now, you know. You can't see it, but my body is bionic. I've got all kinds of... Who have you got time for food, you know? You know, you're not worthy of this. You're not good enough. And so I'm walking around with these less than any room for living. And I was so full of life and living, yet I was not ready yet at all to be able to surrender to this issue of God. What happened is I went around my business at 18, 19, knowing this, I've got no life at all. I don't know who I am. I'm lost. Everybody else seems to be doing something with their life, but I'm not doing anything. And so I was drinking more to try to deal with it, and told each other how much we loved each other, how much we were going to miss each other. And what dignity, can I ask, more than that? So I was so in love with my brothers and sisters and my in-laws and my beautiful family. I was just full of life. There was no room for death. There was no room for at all for death. There was only room for living. I didn't have a clue what love was. If it wasn't for you, I still wouldn't have a clue, you know? It's not what I thought it was. It's an aspect of it, but it's not lust. Love is not lust, necessarily. It is not red roses passionately given at 12 o'clock at night singing over a veranda, you know? It's not chocolates on Valentine's Day only. All those things can make up a presentation of expression of your love. But the truth of the matter is, love, I tell you, I've found, is simply allowing somebody to be in this world just as they are, as God's kid, not wanting to change one bit, despite their imperfection. Despite you know they'd be a lot better off if they just changed for you. I mean, if they would only get it, it'd be so easy. But the truth of the matter is loving someone in this world is letting them be just as they are, God's kid, you know? I had no idea that that was the case because I had a whole series of relationships to destroy before I got to that aspect in my life where it really had to do with something else. And so I obviously was going to fail at the marriage, and I did so because what of expression of your love. But the truth of the matter is, love, I tell you, I've found, is simply allowing somebody to be in this world just as they are, as God's kid, not wanting to change one bit, despite their imperfection. Despite you know they'd be a lot better off if they just changed for you. I mean, if they would only get it. But I had help from my wife. My wife and I did it together. But what happened is over time, my wife was very uncomfortable with living together. We called it in the 1970s, living in sin. They did. When you lived together and you weren't married, you were living in sin. Well, I knew I was living in sin years ago before that. I kind of looked for that, you know. It's like, kind of like, that was where my adrenaline pumped, you know. What are we supposed to do? Let's do it. So I became estranged from that wife after about 7 or 8 years. And I was devastated because I thought I would never get divorced. I even used to tell people, I'll never get divorced. And what do I do immediately when I get separated and divorced? I get into another relationship. And this time, in the skewed thinking that I am experiencing at this point, and a whole lot of abuse from drinking, and now I'm using on a regular basis, you know, pot and stuff like that. The enhancers, you know? The enhancers, yes. And you've heard of them, I'm sure. Yeah. What I was doing is I was... Because when you lived together and you weren't married, you were living in sin. Well, I knew I was living in sin years ago before that. I kind of looked for that, you know. It's like, kind of like, that was where my adrenaline did wrong last time we didn't have children. So I had no children from my first wife, so I get married to my second wife, and immediately I have children. And I had two beautiful boys, Ryan and Camden. The only problem is I realized I was being successful now. Something was happening in my life that was clear at this point, and a whole lot of abuse from drinking. And now I'm using on a regular basis, you know, pot and stuff like that. The enhancers, you know? The enhancers, yes. And you've heard of them, I'm sure. Yeah. What I was doing is I was getting more and more unable to communicate, unable more and more to really be present. So I decided to get married again and have children. That's like painting houses and doing things like that just to get through to pay for expenses for college and living. It was not easy. If they would only get it, it was so easy. But the truth of the matter is loving someone in this world is it's not what I thought it was. It's an aspect of it, but it's not lust. Love is not lust necessarily. All of my options were in a row, see. I say, I make sure that Malcolm's okay. So I'm in this relationship with this woman who I had hired to work for me. And I slowly but surely have a relationship with her, so I'm comfortable. And I leave this woman a broken heart. And I'm not afraid to say that today. You know, you're lost most of the time in your bottle. It's you're the problem, you know. But of course, I was never the problem, you know. I never saw the three fingers pointing back at me. I only saw the one pointing at you, and you needed to change for me to be comfortable, as far as I'm concerned. So I could never be present and listen and be open and honest about what was really going on. I had no clue. So what happened is my wife and I decided, well, I think it was me more, because I was always running, remember, I was a runner. I decided to leave. But before I left, I made sure all of my options were in a row, see. I said, I make sure that Malcolm's okay. So I'm in this relationship with this woman who I had hired to work for me. I was complaining about my second wife, and I basically said, you know, you and I don't communicate. Well, that's right, because you're stupefied most of the night, Malcolm. You know, you're lost most of the time in your bottle. It's you're the problem, you know. But of course, I was never the problem, you know. I never saw the three fingers pointing back at me. I only saw the one pointing at you, and you needed to change for me to be comfortable, as far as I'm concerned. So I could never be present and listen and be open and honest about what was really going on. I had no clue. So what happened is my wife left 2,000 miles away. She didn't want to be around me and see me with this other woman. Rightly so, I understand. But I didn't understand that at the time. And that's the way I operated. So I made decisions based on that mindset. I ended up having the consequences of that mindset, you know? And so I left this woman, and very quickly, even as the ink is still hot on the paper, I married this third wife. And that third wife is the wife of my beautiful son, Michael, who lives in San Luis Obispo. When I got married to that third wife, what happened was, my son is a woman. This is a child in an adult body. This is a child operating without the ability or a design for living. I had no program at all on which to operate. And so I was just basically self-centered, immature, frightened, dishonest, and that's the way I operated. So I made decisions based on that mindset. I ended up having the consequences of that mindset, you know? And so I left this woman, and very quickly, if you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, it takes time. You won't do this over a weekend marathon. You know, this is not F, don't touch it. I get very possessive about this snot right, you know. Anyway, that wife, the third wife, has turned out to be, and plus the second wife, has turned out to be the most beautiful friends one could have. They've been there for me. And the first wife I made amends to, but she didn't want to continue a relationship with me. And that's fine. I made my amends. But the one to leave, she left for Illinois. She left 2,000 miles away. She didn't want to be around me and see me with this other woman. Rightly so, I understand. But I didn't understand that at the time. I was still in blame mode. I was saying, look, I'm going to pay you lots of money. I'm earning good money. I'm going to pay you child support. Like, I'm righteous about it, you know? I don't get to hear them. I cannot hear. I'm deaf. On the paper, I married this third wife. And that third wife is the wife of my beautiful son, Michael, who lives in San Luis Obispo. When I got married to that third wife, what happened was, my second wife, who was the one I really hurt because I left her, and she had no desire to leave, she left for Illinois. She left 2,000 miles away. She didn't want to be around me and see me with this other woman. Rightly so, I understand. But I didn't understand that at the time. I was still in blame mode. I was saying, look, I'm going to pay you lots of money. I'm going to operate. And so I was just basically self-centered, immature, frightened, dishonest, and that's the way I operated. So I made decisions based on that mindset. I ended up having the consequences of that mindset, you know? And so I left this woman, and very quickly, even as the ink is still hot on the paper, I married this third wife. And that third wife is the wife of my beautiful son, Michael, who lives in San Luis Obispo. When I got married to that... all our friends, yes. Thank you. I'm going to tell you the story of my rebirth, okay? I usually do this too fast, but I've reserved time for it because it's the most profound thing that happened. So that I could be present tonight and receive the love that I have received in these rooms, not only tonight, but over the last few months of my life. I have never had so many people contact me just to say simply, I love you, Malcolm. I love you. I love you, Malcolm. Is there anything I can do? I want to be there for you. Men and women, old and young, have called. I've had people from Germany get on a plane and come from Germany just to make sure that I'm treated right. I've had people from Las Vegas call, San Diego call. I've had people from San Francisco visit. I've had people, and I said that not because of me, but because of the power of these rooms. You see? The power of these rooms. Well, what happened for me? I arrived at your door September 12th, 1989. That's when I arrived at your doorstep. I've never been here before. I didn't even know you existed. And I arrived at your doorstep for it because it's the most profound thing that happened, so that I could be present tonight and receive the love that I have received in these rooms, not only tonight, but over the last few months of my life. I have never had so many people contact me just to say simply, I love you, Malcolm. I love you. I love you, Malcolm. Is there anything I can do? I want to be there for you. Men and women, all the bugs often, they're nothing, they're paranoid as hell. You know what I mean? It's like, you see these shadows come under the door and all, you go, it's only you in the room, you go, shh, shut the hell up. And you'd be catatonic for 20 minutes. You wouldn't move, you'd be like, you go. In these rooms, not only tonight, but over the last few months of my life, I have never had so many people contact me just to say simply, I love you, Malcolm. I simply don't have the answers. In fact, I would say they embark on many, many, many different things. And it's so it is with me. Who is it? And it was Michael Harlock. He's dead now. I can use his last name. Michael arrived at my doorstep with one leg. One leg. He had an abscess on the other knee, and he couldn't wear a prosthesis. So he hopped on one leg. Best he could. You know? And he had tattoos down one side of his face. He had hair down to his and you'd be catatonic for 20 minutes. You wouldn't move, you'd be like, you'd go. But I tell you, I love that man now. I had no idea he was my angel sent. Angels come in all different forms. Yeah, they're all winged, but they don't show their wings at first. He comes into my room and says, Malcolm, do you have a minute? I said, oh, do I have a minute? I have all the time in the world for you, Michael. Yeah. How long are you going to be here? You know. He sits now. Michael Harlock, he's dead now. I can use his last name. Michael arrived at my doorstep with one leg. One leg. He had an abscess on the other knee, and he couldn't wear a prosthesis. So he hopped on one leg. Best he could. You know. And he had tattoos down one side of his face. He had hair down to his butt. And he had modified... And you'd be catatonic for 20 minutes. You wouldn't move, you'd be like, you'd go. I know some of you have done it. Anyway, when you got through those horrible moments of nightmares, what happened was this buddy knocked on the door, and I thought to myself, I don't want any visitors. I don't want trying to flick them off, I was trying, you know what I'm talking about, Holly. And so, trying to flick these bugs off, and they weren't, they're nothing, they're paranoid as hell. You know, I'm my bag. No. There goes my lunch! Wait a minute, let me look at that paperwork. No, there it is, he said he was a heroin addict. Of course, I didn't do any of the job, I didn't read the paperwork, didn't even know your name. Hi, how you doing? It's great to have you working here, And so what happened is he said thank you to me for hiring him and giving him a chance. I said, you're welcome. He says, I don't know if you know it, but I'm not a heroin addict today. In fact, I've got it for my life because he didn't do this jabby, jabby, jabby thing. So he said, Malcolm, I got a lot of help from a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. He says, and if you'd like to go to a meeting with me, I'd love to take you. And I said, one of those like really open, willing, I'm very willing to do this. I went... Okay. Meeting, So he never pointed the finger at me, and I never felt like I had, most of the interventions that I had a lot of interventions. People wanted to help me, and I couldn't let them in. what he did for me is he never allowed me to put the sword and shield up, so I didn't need to kind of put it down, you know. I didn't need to put the sword and shield down. It was kind of already surrendered when he came to my life, because he didn't do this jabby, jabby, jabby. And this on Ventura Boulevard down in Los Angeles. But this one was on Radford Hall, actually called Radford, right at the last house on the block. And we used to say, you're welcome to the last house on the block, and it was. So what I did is I went to this meeting, and people shook my hand, just like I told you. I kid you not, they did shake my hand. In fact, I had people waiting at the door to say hello in the old days. I don't see that as much. Welcomers, you know, people welcomed you. And he made me a cup of coffee, and he told me, come on in, you got a seat, or you're with somebody, okay, good, yeah, sit on down here. And made me feel as though, hey, it's okay, you don't have to hang by the door, you don't have to sit in the half-measures room, come on in, you know. And so I sat there, and I listened to you, and this is what I heard. I didn't hear the words, I heard the music. Did you ever hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous? It's something like Radford Hall, actually called Radford, right at the last house on the block. And we used to say, you're welcome to the last house on the block, and it was. So what I did is I went to this meeting, and people shook my hand, just like I told you. I kid you not, they did shake my hand. In fact, I had people waiting at the door to say hello in the old days. I don't see that as much. They seem to be talking to each other in a way that's real. They're not trying to, you know, get over on each other or try to impress somebody or win or compete, arm wrestle somebody into some point of view. They're simply surrendered people who know where they've come from. And they're sharing their experience, strength, and hope with each other. Oh, powerful, powerful, powerful experience it is. I think it's beautiful. And I knew I was in the presence of something real. All my life, I'd wanted to be in the presence of something real. And I didn't know what that sounded like. And I was listening to you, and I realized for the first time in my life, I'm in the presence of something real. These people seem to be talking to each other in a way that's real. They're not trying to... I don't see that as much. Welcomers, you know, people welcomed you. Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. He says, if you'd like to go to a meeting with me, I'd love to. What I've really worked on is a relationship with my boys. Now, do you get this story? You know, and he had tattoos down one side of his face. He had hair down to his butt. And he had modified a holly. People, part of my healing process is involved facing rebirth to transformation, that you are a child of God. Whatever that means to you, at a time, and we do it together. We never do it alone. That has to be the most beautiful friends one could have. And they need is through physical, medical treatment that they need. What I needed was somebody to help me get to through the gates of step three. You see, I realized on step one that I was powerless over alcohol and that life was unmanageable. I realized that. I realized that when I take the drink, and it's very important, she did not want to be with me at that time. Grace did not want to be with me. She had had enough of... So what I did is I... Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. He says, and if you'd like to go to a meeting with me, I'd love to take. He says, and one of the things that I've really worked on is a relationship with my. How long are you going to be here? You know? It processes itself in the body very differently. So it says, give me another one of those you just put in my body. Okay? And so the first drink I take, but the second drink it takes, and it takes me wherever it wants. Now, it may not take me immediately right here, right now, so I'm going to run out that door and go to a liquor store, but I can tell you I'm going to try to get rid of you as fast as I can so I can get to a liquor store. Now, I may not do it tonight because I've got to impress my in-laws that I'm still okay on that kind of thing. But as soon as they've gone to bed, I'm thinking about, well, I could get down there and I could go to the liquor store, and they would never. Girlfriend or the boyfriend that could drink half a glass and say, no, I don't want it anymore, thanks, I'm feeling it. Right? I'm feeling it. No, not for me. The normal temperate drinker drinks one drink. That drink is sufficient to metabolize or do whatever it does to the body, a medical and the physical the aspect of the treatment they need is through physical, medical treatment that they need. The other people I ran from because it was I couldn't face myself. But I was beginning to face myself a these people seem to be talking to each other in a way that's real. the last house on the block. And we used to say, you're welcome to the last house on the block. And it was. Like I had, you know, most of the interventions that I had a lot of interventions. People wanted to, there it is, you know, he said he was a heroin addict. Of course, I didn't do any of the job. I didn't read the paper. Didn't even know you. My best friends. But I tell you, I love that man now. Flick him off, you know. I was trying, you know what I'm talking about, Holly. Old and young, of course. I've had people from Germany get on a plane and come to. I know, I don't know. And he who says he knows does not know. The second birth, Carl Jung says you have, is a spiritual birth. You won't do this over a weekend marathon. I'm deaf. I operated. So I made decisions based on that mindset. I ended up having to make sure all of my options were in a row, see. I say, I make sure that Malcolm's okay. There's an idea, it's real simple. But this idea needs 11 and a half more steps. That our lives have become unmanageable? Ah, that's because, you see, it's coupled with an obsession of the mind. You've got a physical allergy that's coupled with an obsession of the mind. And you see, what happens is over time, even if you've self-willed, I'm not going to pick up that drink, you've got the grass. No matter how many promises I made to do that, you know? Because I've just got one more tab, you see. Now you say, well, okay, well, how do you treat that? Well, how you treat that is you don't put it in your body, you do it differently. So it says, give me another one of those you just put in my body. Okay? The physical, the aspect of the treatment they need is through physical, medical. When you're breaking up, I didn't want to break up with Grace. The other people. And so I sat there and I listened to you, and this is what I heard. I did that time, and I did say yes to Michael. And I walked into your room. I trusted the process that was. I can't go here and I can't go there, and it's like, you know. So what happens is you start obsessing about the. You've got one more tab, you see. Now you say, well, okay, well, how do you treat? Go to the liquor store. But I can tell you, I'm going to try to get rid of you as fast as I can. It's unmanageable. I realize that. I realize that when I take the drink, accountability for her actions, and she wanted out. And I was back and forth with her. You know what I realized for the first time in my life? I was in the presence of something real. Shield up. So I didn't need to kind of put it down, you know. I didn't need to put the sobriety. I'm clean and sober. He said, because I'm also an alcoholic. Fine. I thought to myself, oh, I don't want any visitors, I don't want to see anybody. Who is it? Bugs often, they're nothing, they're paranoid as hell. I had so many people contact me just to say simply, I love you, man. I love you. This is involved facing the fact that I don't know. Child of God. Whatever that means to you, of your understanding. Anyway, that wife, the third wife, on the paper, I married this third wife. And that third wife is, and I leave this woman a broken heart. And I'm not afraid to say, you know, you and I don't communicate. Well, that's right, because she was stupefied by children. That's a sound, sober thought. So I became estranged from that wife after about 7 or 8 years. It's like washing the windows, like landscaping. Better off if it just changed for you. If it wasn't for you, I still wouldn't have a clue, you know? Miss my family, and I had the most beautiful time in the world. Light around it, and the garage doors, which were small by comparison, let a regular car in, became very large, very dominant. And all of a sudden, something marched up behind those doors. And I said to this mysterious creator, I said, you know, I don't believe in you. That's the best I can do. They told me down in those meetings, I have to be honest. How more can I tell you that I don't believe in you? And so I dropped to my knees and started crying. I do one of these regular snot things on. I went back to my, it was November 26, 1989. I went back to my, I did not know. And it stood at that gate and it kind of looked at me and it looked at this pathetic, I was still standing in an outer body. But what had dropped to my knees was this physical entity. And it was a big hall painted white with all this light around it. And the garage doors, which were small by comparison, let a regular car in, became very large, very dominant. And all of a sudden, something marched up behind those doors. And I thought, this time I didn't go, shh. I mean, fast, folks. It was right. An obsession is an idea. It's real simple. But this idea is so powerful, it overrides all. Drinker drinks one drink. That drink is sufficient to metabolize and do whatever it does to the body. A medical people. With Grace, I kind of just went on this. I did something all with each other. Oh, powerful, powerful, powerful experience it is. And so I thought, yeah. And he made me a cup of coffee and he told me, come on in. You got a seat? Oh, you're with somebody? Okay, go down here. Do I look like I need? I smell like a. Really loved your kids to do this. You know, your mother-in-law is right. You're a scumbag, you know? Clutches on it. Are these the kind of people I hung with? Now, if he was the one who's gone out in the world and fought the battles, he's the one who's got all the symbols of achievement. He's the one who's created all the impressions he was something he was not. He was the one who was telling all the lies to everybody. He was going to all the bars and shooting the shit about what he had and what he hadn't got. You know, how many victories he'd won, you know? But he was nothing. He was like the man of La Mancha. Sancho, my horse. They got wooden horses. You're not going anywhere, you idiot. But that's what I would tell myself, you know. I could rescue the damsel in distress. I lived in fantasy until then. That fantasy stopped very quickly. That fantasy told me that warrior could leave and he didn't have to come back ever. That the true prince to the throne, you might say, was here. In the place it had been abandoned many years ago. In the place it had been lost many years ago. The place it had been exiled, orphaned. The orphan child syndrome, the abandoned child syndrome. It was here. And it needed attention like today needed attention. It needed attention more than anything. It needed my attention, not yours, my attention. I needed to take responsibility, full responsibility for that. And I couldn't. And he saw what looked like a sackcloth, a little tiny sackcloth. In that sackcloth was something beating. Boom, boom. Will you please help me? I need help. I need help. And he never talked to me in a sense that, you know, I had this dialogue going off with him, but I had a sense that he says, how can you be a child of mine if you won't be a child in you? How can you be a child? In other words, I've never been a child. All I'd ever been was a parent and an adult, parenting my sisters and brothers, trying to parent myself, trying to parent my mother and father as the eldest son, you know? The throne, you might say, was here. In the place it had been abandoned, the true, authentic self. This Lakarin became very large, very dominant. And all of a sudden, something marched up behind those doors. I'm hopeless. I'm truly, truly hopeless. That's where I needed. I made you my higher power. I tried it real simple, but this idea is so powerful, it overrides all other ideas. Any fancy, smoochy Los Angeles clinic place. I'm talking about a simple program. Simple, so simple, it goes right over your head. You know, really, it's so simple, it's so beautiful, it's so profound, it's so divine. I don't use words like that very often, but it's so beautiful, it's holy. If there is holiness, it's holy, yeah. If there are miracles, until then, that fantasy stopped very quickly. That fantasy told me that warrior could leave and he didn't have to come back ever. His hand, and believe me, he had big hands, big palms. He was a very big man, very, very eye of this warrior. And the warrior walked in, you know, marching ceremoniously. Large doors, which were small by comparison, let a regular car in, became very large. I don't know how to live. I am hopeless. I'm truly, truly hopeless. That's access. For me to, it's like, you know. So what happens is you start obsessing about the ease and comfort that comes at once from the first drink. I'm here to do that, you know? Because I've just got one more tab, you see, through the gates of step three. You see, I realized on step, and so I did that. And over the process of time, I was able to do my fourth step. I was able to see my part in it. I was able to see what I was doing. I was able to see that I didn't know how to live. And there was a child in me desperately needed my care. And I call that the spirit, you know? That place that warrior found, the true me, that was an embryonic spirit, something that was not developed. It had not developed into a full child, but it was still alive, and it needed me to care for it. So I took responsibility to do that. And that's what I've been doing for 20 years. I've been trying to take care of that beautiful child in me, and I've been mostly trying to take care of it, but once I get in alignment with God and me, I give it to you. What I found, I give it away. And what happens, it comes back abundantly. It's a paradox. I don't want it. No, there's loads of it here. No, I don't want it. It's just beautiful. We've tapped into this incredible place, guys. You and I have tapped into this incredible place through God's incredible intervention. You know? And I don't mean to give you the God trip here. I want you to find your own God, please. I'm still struggling with mine. Boy, does he struggle with me. Sometimes I think he dreams of me, and sometimes I think I dream of him. But it doesn't matter. We're still dreaming. You know? As long as we keep the dream alive, I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.